Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to our Wednesday Supercoach Cafe mentoring call. And how many of you were able to watch the video? Most. It's there. So if you didn't see it, you'll be able to watch it. It's a clip from the beginning of the last Super Coaching Intensive. If you've been on Coaching Master, you know that each of them have been different and the next one will be different again. So I don't think I'll be doing that again on the next one. But, note, I wrote a note. We have 5 places left on the next one. So if you do want to come, what are the dates, Lynn? It's next weekend, is it?
Next Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So if you are able to come, if you're interested in coming, we have 5 places left for you to come. The thing on that chart, so for those of you who didn't see it yet, I sort of traced back from transformational impact, which is kind of the goal of the work that we do, to kind of what's before that, and what's before that, and what's before that, and what's before that. And I take it back from transformational impact to insight, which leads to transformational impact, to pointing, which often leads to insight, to noticing, which lets us know where to point, to listening, which is how we notice, to settling, both settling for our clients, settling for ourselves. But I went on. It didn't actually stop there in the original, because what's underneath that is our grounding, is our understanding. And guess what our grounding's based on? Transformational impact, which is based on insight. So it's turtles all the way down. The first transformational impact has to be our own. The first qualification you have as a transformation coach, as a transformative coach, is your insight, your transformative experience. Now, it doesn't need to be full and complete and amazing and important. One of there's sort of in the 90s was the first real burst of teaching in this field. So Sid kind of started in the 70s and stuff was going on in the 80s. And in the 90s, there were some movements in health realization and I can't remember. It was called neocognitive psychology, but then it was also called, there was another name for it. They kind of worked this out for how they were going to present it. And in that burst of teaching, the people who were learning in the psychology school, so they were learning this as a psychology, were kind of essentially told it's going to take a couple years for your grounding to get to a level where you really can do this work. So you just need to plan for that. The health realization school came at it almost exactly the other way. If you had an insight in the morning, they wanted you up and teaching in the afternoon, up and sharing in the afternoon. Now, which one's right? Yeah, right. Terrible question. Just there's no answer to that question. But there is something to be said just generally about recognizing that I wrote about this once. Sometimes you gotta go to church before you preach, right? Sometimes you've got to find this in you before you can share it. In fact, all the time. And sometimes that's just in the moment, and sometimes that's part of a larger exploration. And I was thinking about what does that look like? You know, if somebody, I'm going to guess a lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about because you've had that experience. That's why you're here. It might not have been a big, great story version of it, but you can tell you're different. The world looks different to you than it used to. You're walking in the world in a new way with new eyes. It's a different you, however you think about it. It's changed. And I got a copy of a paper that was written a while back, I think in the 90s, by Mavis Karn, who a lot of you know, obviously all of you on Coaching Mastery know, on the adolescence and the myth of peer pressure. And I don't think this paper is available. I've looked online. You can find an abstract, but you might be able to find it. But this is a little excerpt that I thought speaks to what we're looking for in our clients, but what we kind of need to find in ourselves first. So this is now an excerpt from the paper. In her book, Creating the Teachable Moment, 1993, Darlene Stewart told the following story of her interaction with a young boy diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. When he forgot to take his medicine, as he did today, he was a tornado in tennis shoes. Windows shook when he passed. Now, slumped against the wall, he was unnaturally quiet. Looking at the defeated boy, my mood dropped too. From that state of mind, I had no techniques, no words of advice or encouragement. I felt like I'd said it all before, hundreds of times. Now, I'm guessing if you've done much of this, you've had that experience of kind of feeling like, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Are we going to let's do this again. Okay, there's these principles, right? Or however you go about it, right? Well, that's where she was. I felt like I'd said it all before hundreds of times, not expecting an answer. I asked, Danny, what in the world do you want? Without hesitation, Danny looked at me and said, I want shining eyes. A big hole opened in front of me. What do you mean? I asked, already knowing the answer. Danny said, I want shining eyes. I want someone, when they see me, to get eyes that are soft and wet and shiny, like they have a light coming from behind. Shining eyes. That's what I want. I know you know that. I know you know shining eyes, whatever you call it. I tend to talk about it as the twinkle. Mavis goes on to say, I think that's what most of us would like. We would like the feeling that we would get if someone looked at us with shining eyes. The trouble is that we keep looking for others to provide that feeling, or we see others as being able to prevent us from having that feeling. It is also true that many of us are in surroundings where nobody's eyes shone, no matter who or what they were looking at. I suggest that everyone is, at all times, doing the best they know to do in order to find that shining eyes feeling. And I suggest that every one of our clients is looking for that. Now, they tend to be looking for that in a form. They're looking for that via their business. They're looking for that via their marriage. They're looking for that via their children. They're looking for that via their spiritual journey. They're looking for that via their physical health. But they're looking for that shining eyes feeling. They look for it, this is Mavis now, where they've been taught to look for it. In accomplishments, in bank accounts, in status, in drugs and alcohol, in others' eyes. What we haven't realized is that the feelings we're looking for are inside. We feel them when we are in our true self state of mind. They are natural. It requires no effort to experience them. Deep, positive, healthy feelings are what remain when we calm down and our head clears, when we let our thoughts flow. That's the game. It's the whole game. And your knowing that shining eyes is possible, you're spending as much time in that shining eyes place in you. You're being able to notice it in your clients and point to it so that they notice it, so that they recognize its significance, so they don't just walk away and think, oh, that was nice. Anyways, back to my work, back to my goals, back to my success. That is not instead of what they want. That is a platform from which creating what people want is so much easier. Because A, it's amazing how the world moves and people are moved by shining eyes. But B, it's so much easier to play the game when we've already won. Because then We don't have to worry about if it doesn't work out the way we want it to work out. We don't have to catch ourselves up in our own thinking about success and failure, because we're already there. We're not starting with the end in mind, like Stephen Covey talked about in The Seven Habits. We're starting from the end, and we're staying at the end as we go on the journey of creation. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. But it's better than that, because it's not that we arrive where we started. We never really leave it. I was reading a piece by Jeff Foster. He's a non-dual teacher. And he said that the wave can spend its entire life looking for the ocean, but it will never, ever, ever be any more or less ocean than it was when it began. We're searching for home from home. We're aiming our shining eyes towards shining eyes. And it's just a different game from there. It's a game that's much more rewarding. It's a game that you are at least as likely to succeed at, in many cases far more likely to succeed at, than playing the game in order to get shining eyes. And that's the basis of our coaching. That's the whatever your version of that is for now. That is the space from which the best coaching happens. That is the space where miracles happen. And the point, if there's a point, is to point to the space from the space. To look out at the world through shining eyes and point to shining eyes in our clients, that space in them that will manifest completely different through them than it does through us and is exactly the same. I can put petrol, gasoline, into a Porsche, and I can put it into a Kia. And same petrol. They'll run a little different. That's what we're up to. And all we're up against is that it is so freaking easy to forget that. It is so freaking easy to make it about the forms, the measures, the metrics, the goals. It is so easy to make it about us. How am I doing? Am I a good enough coach? It's so easy to make it about our client. Oh, they're resistant. Oh, they don't have what it takes. Oh, they're so far away. One thought away. That is what is so exciting about this. One thought away. Not a session. Not a coaching contract. Not a year of meditation practice. One thought away, always. Yeah, but what if I lose it? Oh, you will. Because we all do. We all get caught up in our thought-created realities. But if I'm sitting here in front of you and a sandstorm blows up around me, which, trust me, would freak me out even more than it would freak you out. But let's just say a sandstorm blows up all around me right now, and I cannot see you and you cannot see me. When the dust settles, not only am I still here, I never left. We can lose our footing. We can never lose the ground. want to get really, really good at this, go deeper. Stay in the conversation. Keep looking for new and fresh. And you'll keep seeing. Listen. Versus think about, those of you who are with Dickon and I on Monday, he mentioned that Sid would often talk about listening and that it was somewhat tactical. Because when you're really listening, you're not thinking. And when you're not thinking, now there's thoughts going through, but you're not thinking them. The sandstorm settles. The dust settles. It's much easier to settle when you're listening, and it's much easier to listen when you settle. It is a virtuous upward spiral. That's the value of, from my point of view, us getting together every week or so to talk about this. To remind ourselves. To see deeper. To hear more. But not more as in an accumulation. More almost as like if, this is a weird analogy, but if you were up on stage and you were kind of like in one of those nightmares, I don't know if you've ever had the nightmares where suddenly you're performing and like you don't, it's called the actor's nightmare, but I know a lot of people have had it in other contexts. Suddenly you're up on stage and you don't know what the play is or what the show is or what you're supposed to do, but the audience is there and you're there and you're usually naked. Like when you find yourself on that stage, what this conversation does is it loosens the bolts that are holding up the stage. Everything you see loosens the bolts and loosens the bolts and loosens the bolts. And at a certain point, the stage collapses. So it's just another way of looking at what we're doing with our clients, what in order to do with our clients, we need to crash through that stage. We need that stage to fall down around our ears first. But it's okay if they happen at the same time. It's okay if it happened to you in the morning and it's happening for your clients in the afternoon. In fact, I would say that's been part of the secret of my success over time, is I've never worried about the fact that I didn't know for myself what I say to my clients until just before I say it. I haven't seen that as problematic. I've seen that as the way it works. It's a gorgeous gig. Not for the faint of heart, but I suspect that none of you are that faint of heart. So, that all said, over to you. What would you love to talk about?
Alrighty, let's start with Joseph today. Hey, Joseph, how you doing?
Hey, Joseph. Hey, Michael. So I've got a couple questions, if that's okay. And can you talk so I can see you?
Yes, I will talk. You will see
okay,
me.
You're good. Oh,
I will envy your Malibu beach house.
Hey, well, thank you. You know, this is
all. Mind you, I liked that house you had in Springfield as well. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, you know, it was a bit flat for me, but yeah. So my question today is, well, my first question. I've got a client and he kind of enjoys doing what he's doing, but he really wants to do something else. But also he's not willing to do what he has to do. Like he has, you know, tons of bills lying around that all he has to do is call the insurance companies and he can turn it into like, you know, a bunch of money. And he just really doesn't want to, you know, we've kind of, and I was just kind of curious how you would approach something like that. Because he's so up in his head all the time about all this stuff that he thinks he needs to be doing that he can't he's just having a hard time seeing, and he's very more logical than, I mean, this has taken me. Go ahead.
If I was to have him in front of me, and so I'm asking you to speculate, right? I know you probably don't know, but maybe you do. And I said to him, hey, what's the deal with you and Joseph? Like, why are you there? What are you hoping to get from it? What would he say?
I think what he's really hoping to get is freedom, like being able to make enough money at his business to be able to have the freedom to do what he wants.
Cool. I'm going to let the dog in, but is that how freedom works?
I don't know.
Because if it was, then it would make a lot of sense for me to help him work on his business as a starting point. If that's where freedom comes from being successful in your business, then of course, to help fulfill the coaching contract, I'm going to help him with his business. But if the coaching contract is freedom.
Well, I mean, the coaching contract itself is really like, we've actually adjusted it because I've worked with him for like a year and he hasn't made that much progress because he's not, when he does the stuff he's supposed to, then it happens. And when he doesn't, it doesn't, obviously. And so we kind of shifted and said, like, let's focus on, you know, basically your life, kind of getting your life in order and stuff. And so that's kind of the coaching concept.
So again, is getting your life in order where freedom comes from?
I think freedom comes from just understanding that, I mean, we're always free. We just think we're not.
So if that's true, now I would agree with you. I do think that's true. Then why would I want to talk to him about getting his life in order? That will be the effect of freedom. Why do I want to talk to him about his business? That may or may not be the effect of freedom, depending on a lot of things.
Yeah.
It is not my job to get him to do stuff he doesn't want to do. Now, if you make that your job, then that's your job. Like that's up. When we make an agreement with a client, some of it is explicit, some of it is tacit, some of it is sort of implied. And if we don't actively disembody that idea, detacit it, then yeah, they're going to go, hey, why the hell aren't you helping me with my business? But it's like, no, that's not what I signed on to do. Now, I will tell you that as you get quieter, as you get clearer, as you see the freedom you already are before anything in your life changes, it's pretty likely, given that you're really good at what you do and you've got this great stuff, that it'll go well, right? That's likely, right? But without that, man, you are going about this exactly in the, like if I was going to design the hardest way to find freedom, it would be successful in your business and make everything in your life work. Complete the wheel of life so you are at a 10 in every area. Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, I will be employed for a very long time, but I'm not very helpful. So it really is seeing for you, what am I really up to here? And then getting better, and this is a skill, all right, at explicitly contracting around that so that you both know why you're there, so that when they do get caught up and go, yeah, but what about my business? What about this? What about that? You don't, it's not random. You saying, well, we talked about why we're not talking about it right now, but I tell you what, at some point you're going to settle, even if it's only for a moment, and you're going to know what's next in your business. It's inevitable. That's how the mind works. But as long as you think, I've got to get this and this and this and this in order to feel shining eyes, in order to feel free. I mean, look, you can pay me while you fuck yourself, but it's kind of not a great plan. I don't want to really be party to that. So I know I'm being a little intense with you, but
oh, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's actually helpful. Of just, I mean, do you do that with your business clients? Of just saying, hey, we're not working on your business. Like, mostly we're just working on understanding this.
It depends. A lot of my business clients just go do stuff. They don't have that problem.
Oh yeah. You're in a different tier. That makes total sense.
Yeah. That's only a problem because it's a means to an end. Like, if you want to create a business, actually, it's not that hard. I mean, how successful you are, how quickly, there's a lot of variables in that. But it is, like you say, it is pretty straightforward. Yeah. But to me, if somebody's consistently not doing that and saying they want to, that's not the real conversation. Because when that's the real conversation, it just happens. People just do it.
No, that's super helpful, man. I appreciate that. And my other question is kind of similar, but not really. It's just, I've got a client and she just tells like ridiculously long stories. And I'm not sure really where to step in and where to not step in. And like yesterday she told this really long story and I was honestly getting just like a bit bored and exhausted. And then all of a sudden she goes to this place of just full on emotion and releases stuff that she hasn't released for like 30 years. So it's like, well, if I wouldn't have sat and listened, then that might not have happened. But also, like, we don't get into the actual coaching until like an hour into the conversation. The conversation's only supposed to last an hour. It's all usually taking like way, way longer with her.
I'm gonna challenge the idea that the actual coaching doesn't start till you start talking. See, I think the actual coaching starts the moment you presence each other. The moment you sit down together, the coaching began. Possibly actually even before, because they're usually thinking about the coaching before.
Yeah.
So whether you ever talk or not, that's coaching. You are facilitating insight. Sometimes insight facilitates really well through listening. And what's nice is sometimes it can facilitate pretty well even through sort of listening. Right? Like, it's great when you can really deeply listen, but you know, I don't know about you, I get tired sometimes. Like, but what's great is even that is often so much more than somebody's used to. So that isn't to say, I mean, that at another time, I might not just cut them off 5 minutes in and go, let's find another way. Because all roads lead to the same place.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that if you hadn't listened, she wouldn't have come to that insight. I don't know. And this is where there was a distinction that came up. I think it came up on Monday on the Dickin group. And it's between this idea that wisdom is going to tell us what to do and then it's our job to do it.
Yeah.
And seeing that wisdom is moving our bones already. So I'm going to posit as a theory. Can't prove this, wouldn't try.
Yeah.
That it was wisdom, in whatever way you think of that. It was wisdom that kept your mouth shut even while you were bored. But that's not to say that wisdom might not have cut her off 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
So the idea of how do I know when to, probably right around the time you do.
That's a great point. And the last super simple question is like, how do you settle yourself before you meet with a client? Like, do you just come jumping in here right after you've like had breakfast or something? Or like, do you have a process that you go through that you settle?
Well, you may have noticed it involves coffee. No, honestly, when I teach a group like this, okay, the first 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I usually say it's a ramble, but it isn't really a ramble. It's a settle. And I'm not just settling myself. I'm settling all of us. I'm giving us all a bit of space and time to settle so that by the time we get into this dialogue, we're in a place to have insight. We're in a place to be impacted.
That makes total sense. Do you do that with your one-on-one clients too? Like, do you ramble or do you kind of just dive in?
Usually, no, I let them ramble. Usually at the beginning.
That's kind of interesting. Rambling is a way of settling. I've never saw it that way.
Well, it's just noise in head.
Well, thank you so much. This has been helpful. And I just wanted to tell you one more thing. The transformational coaching model that you said you might not teach in some of the other ones, that was the most impactful thing that I got out of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and so much so, yeah, Doreen mentioned rambling is morning pages. It's totally true. I just started that you recommended 3.5 years ago. That's been amazing. But we have a practice group every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Arizona time. If anyone here wants to join, we just go to breakout rooms and we practice all the things that you talk about. And if anyone wants to do that, they can message me. We can have as many as want that just want to deepen their understanding and learn all better that you're teaching. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Jason. Nice to talk to you.
All right, let's go talk to Shayel. Hey, Shayel, how you doing?
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm not really sure how to say this. I'm really not sure how to say this. I really don't know how to say this. Interpret this however way you like, because I don't know if I should say do you or I am, or I really don't know, but I'm at a stage when, like, I started at the beginning of this year, I thought I'm really going to focus this year on coaching, on becoming a coach rather than, you know, dabbling. And I felt really empowered after the first coaching mastery weekend. I felt very empowered, very inspired, very like, I know how to do this. And there was definitely some level of being able to do this. As the year has progressed, that feeling has dissipated. And I get it. I'm very new. It was just a funny sequence of events. And I'm not discouraged so much, because I see, you know, that's part of the process, and you're gonna keep going and keep working on this. I don't know what my question is. At one point it was like, did that happen to you? Or it just feels funny.
So let me speak to what I hear and then redirect me. Okay. So it is not at all unusual to think, oh, now I got this. Oh, fuck, what am I doing? Oh, now I got this. Oh, fuck, what am I doing? Like, that is pretty bog standard normal. Like, that, everyone's got their own version of it. So, now the solution is pretty simple. Recognize that how you happen to be feeling about it is a momentary passing phenomenon, and coach your ass off and you'll get better. So you may have heard me tell the story about when my son was taking up tennis because he wanted to make the high school tennis team. And you know, he would get so frustrated. There were times where he played well, but he would get incredibly frustrated. And I finally just made a rule. I said, you're not allowed to have an opinion for the first 100 hits of each session, practice session we do. After you've done 100, if you want to get mad because you hit the ball out or the ball didn't go where you want, go for it. But the first 100. Now, he had to agree with me, right? I couldn't make him think like that, but he kind of thought that was a good idea. And he started getting in a lot more swings and he started getting a lot better. It's the same with anything. We can talk ourselves in and out of it all day long, or we can notice our thoughts trying to talk us in and out of it all day long and carry on. Sitting down with the next person, talking with the next person, talking with the next person. So I said at the beginning that our first qualification is our insight, is our seeing. But we get to the next qualification by doing it and learning and experiencing and adjusting. And we don't even have to do that. We're designed to learn. like that. We start to see, we know where we're headed, shining eyes, let's say. And we start to get better at that. We start to see that earlier. We start to sense warmer, colder for ourselves. And follow that and trust that more, and we get better. When Woody Allen said 80% of success is showing up, he may have been underestimating. Because when you show up with another human being, this deepens. Sandy Krop was one of my early mentors, and I remember her having lunch with us and my wife saying, you know, how has your work, saying to Sandy, changed over the 25, I think, years at that point that she'd been doing it. And she said, well, I sort of saw something about this 25 years ago. And I really had one way of talking to my clients about it. And she said, and now 25 years on, I have 500 ways of talking to my clients about it. Still shining eyes. Still awakening to that in ourselves. But as you do more, you see more. And sometimes... Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, no.
It's almost as if, which, because that all makes sense, and I especially like the tennis story, because I don't remember that one. It really spoke to me. And then as you were talking, I realized, I think I see my clients as casualties. Like, they seem to be happy because they're coming. But then I say, but really, how much change? I mean, some of them change a bit, but it's like,
so I don't know how long the freeze will last, but I'll say this, and if Shale can't hear it, she'll hear it on the recording. Every coach I know in this work wants to recall all their old clients, wants to call them all back, apologize, and go, can we do this again? Because now I know what I'm talking about. And that happens anywhere from every 6 months to every year. Like, you know, that. Now, the thing is, the reason they're not casualties, the reason that they're not collateral damage, is because whatever you did before was helpful. Like, I look back on the work I used to do with people for 18 years in NLP, and it wasn't this. But it's interesting to me that even though I come from a completely different place and point in a different direction than I used to, none of my old clients have gotten their phobias back. Right? None of the businesses that my clients grew when I was working with them in a different way suddenly crashed and burned because I saw deeper. You can only help the person in front of you, and you can only help them from where you are. And when you see deeper, you'll help more. So that's, I put that all on tape for you. Catch it on the replay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
All right, let's go talk to Tracy next. Hey, Tracy, can you unmute for me?
Hey, Tracy.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Michael, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
Good, so I wanted to share this big insight I've had, and it really ties into what you spoke about today. I first heard about the principles only 4 months ago, and it completely turned my world upside down, inside out. It was just the most wild experience. I had that like lightning strike experience, and I was already working as a mindfulness and meditation coach. And so all of a sudden I was just, all I wanted to talk about was the three principles. I didn't want to talk about anything else anymore. But then I got into this really weird place of trying to force it. And what I've learned these last couple of weeks, the insight I had is that I'm not ready. I'm not ready. Like, I have to further my own development. I have to continue to go deeper within myself first before taking others on this journey. And so your talk today was so timely, but I just wanted to bring up with you, like, these last 4 months, I felt in no man's land. So I've had this incredible insight, but I'm not quite ready to openly point to it. So I feel a little adrift. So I wonder if you have any advice about that.
Well, what came to mind first off was Winston Churchill's advice. If you're going through hell, keep going. Right. In other words, you will come out the other side. I didn't talk about this as the principles for a couple of years. Not actually because I didn't think it was helpful or blah, blah, blah. I didn't want to let the principles down. Like, I didn't want to do wrong by, I actually had to, George and Linda Pransky took me aside one day and said, you know, you do what we do. You are allowed to talk about it. And I needed that. Like, in my mind, I didn't want to be disrespectful of what I had seen. So yeah, I get that. And what I found, so this would be my get out of jail free card, is you can be 1,000% honest with people. You can say to them, I don't know what I'm doing. I have had an insight and it has fundamentally changed the way I see things. I don't think I know how to share it with you yet, but if you're up for it, I'm happy to try. Not only will most people come along for that ride very willingly because they'll see it in you, but you will surprise yourself with how often, given that you don't know what you're doing, really cool things emerge. And then there's no integrity issue. There's no bait and switch issue. There's no waiting for some mythical future to arrive where now I'm ready. You're in the game. You're just not pretending to be somewhere else in the game than you are. There was one piece of advice I would like to wipe off the face of the earth. I would like to give humanity amnesia. I'd like to go back in time to the first person who ever said it and take their life lightly. I mean, in a loving way, you know, it's fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Good God, what a terrible piece of advice. And utterly unnecessary to get really, really good at something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That helps. That takes the pressure off of needing to be 100% in it. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Who's got next?
We are going to go to Mary next. Hey, Mary, can you unmute for me, please?
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. You know, this is also pertinent to me, but I do have a couple of situations, actually a couple of clients that they're so willing to stay in the conversation, but I find it very difficult as soon as I point to more the divine side, the spiritual side of the principles. And maybe what you just said or had a little bit of an insight for me, but still I would love for you to kind of, you know, speak to when you have somebody you obviously notice some progress, especially the concept of, you know, staying in the moment or resting in the present rather than, you know, dwelling in the past or looking into the future. But I with these two clients, I really would love to take the next step to go beyond and go deeper. But the minute, or maybe I just still don't have a good way to articulate it. But the minute I kind of want to pull out, you know, Sydney Banks' concepts about the divine consciousness, the divine thought, that's where I felt very stuck. I see that resistance. So I just would love for you to...
Did you ever, and I do, please, I don't think this is going to be offensive, but if it is, I didn't mean it. like I genuinely, but have you ever tried to convert anyone to Christianity?
No, I don't believe in that. I do. Oh, okay. I don't believe that.
Okay. Yeah. So no, it would have been either answer would have been okay. Right? Cause I just would have gone in a different direction with it. Yeah. So why would you try to convert them to the three principles? When somebody, and let me go say what I mean, because I don't want that to come out wrong. You intuitively know, I don't want to impose my belief system on somebody else, right? That's why you don't do it. It is part of your belief system. I'm assuming you're wearing a cross. So I assume that's part of your belief system, but you know, it doesn't feel right to impose that. When you try to share this as a set of concepts, particularly somebody else's concepts, Sid Banks' concepts, that's just good old-fashioned proselytizing. It isn't how this works. Now, there are things you see for yourself. Mm-hmm. You may not have articulated them, but they're why you're here. If you share that with them, the resistance won't be there. I can pretty much guarantee it. People know to resist having somebody else's beliefs put on them, somebody else's concepts put on them. Nobody fights truth. You can't. You recognize truth. So if you notice you're sharing concepts, how great that they're resisting, because it would be awful if they took on the concept. They're telling you, hey, please just show me what you know. Show me why your eyes shine. That's what I want.
Okay. I hear you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Who's got next?
We are going to go to Dimitri. Dimitri, can you unmute and bring your... Oh, you've done your camera already. Well,
trained professional.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Lynn. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you one question about one special field of coaching, because I'm a money coach, principles-based. And what I noticed that when you, at least the program I've seen you made about money, was with Steve Chandler. Mm. And why have you decided to invite Steve to this program? Because Steve is not exactly principle-based. Oh, why was that? What's about this choice? Why was the program about money was not completely based on the principles? Or as far as I understood, there was a need to invite someone like Steve that I admire absolutely, but he's not exactly the principles man. What was about it?
Well, I mean, the first thought that came to mind is, I wonder why Lewis invited Clark. Like, he's my exploring buddy. Steve introduced me to the principles and then saw what happened to me and went, shit, I better look at this again. Right? So we have been each other's teachers. So no, I agree. There are things in that program that aren't how I would talk about them, but that's where we are in our exploration, and he's the person I've done the most exploring around that with in my life. So it made sense for us to share where we were in our exploration, because people find it really helpful. That's all. Nothing deeper than that. No.
What would you suggest if I talk with my clients about, because my clients especially come to me with money issues. And of course, I talk with them, and I always say it's not about money and blah, blah, blah. And of course, it's about all about principles. And I try to convey this kind of message. But maybe there are still some things that can be introduced, especially in this money field, always based on principles.
Well, okay. So if I were to talk with somebody and what they'd come for ostensibly was money, right? What they'd said is, hey, I want to make this much money, or I want to change this, or, you know, any of the above. One of the things I would probably do, now this is all theoretical, right? I want to be really clear about that. Depends. What I would actually do would depend on what came up when I was sitting with them. But what I would probably do is begin by exploring with them why. Like, what is it that you think if you sort this money thing out, you'll have that you don't have now? And my guess is, because I've had this conversation hundreds of times, if not more, that it will be freedom, that it will be, I can finally relax, that it will be, I'll be safe. Wherever they go with it. And then what I would probably do is say, well, if I can show you where relaxation lives in you, where safety lives in you, where freedom lives in you, do you think you would be more or less likely to be able to make money as well if you decide you still want that? And I would kind of know they would say more. And so then I would say, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to get you everything you think money is going to get you first. And then we can look at making money. A lot of that's pretty straightforward when you're not caught up in all your thinking about what it's going to do for you.
Yeah. Like a wheelbarrow thing. Yeah. I mean, it's if you can put it in a wheelbarrow. Yeah, I use it a lot. I use it a lot, actually. It really helps because, then I talk to people about coming from desire and not from need, because when they are needy about money, it's like, I need money to make this happen and to make that happen. And it's.
You know, one of the reasons that I can talk really effectively with people who've suffered a lot with depression and suicidal ideation is because I suffered a lot with depression and suicidal ideation and I found my way through. One of the reasons that I can talk with people about money and its relationship with fear and greed and need is because I've spent most of my life in a struggle with money, fear, need, and greed. So I am eminently qualified to share from what I've seen so far, which is way better than where it was. I don't pretend to being, you know, above or beyond it, but I'm not mired in it in the way that I was for chunks of my life. So that, you know, that just gives me credibility in my mind.
you're in better position than me because I personally have never struggled with money and sometimes I don't understand people. This is like easy for me and they just don't get it. But yeah.
So it doesn't mean you can't get there. It means that it's so much easier to. So one of the things that I don't coach about a lot is relationships because I've only ever really been in one and it's really good. So I'll share what I see, but you know, it's not that there's no value there, but there are things that people struggle with that I have to abstract to make sense of because I've never experienced them that way. But as I've developed as a coach, I've learned to do that because it's helpful. I talk about sometimes a guy I mentored who was a motocross rider. And he's one of the few people I've met in life. I've met a couple. One was a ski jumper who genuinely doesn't seem to have the fear chip. Not brave, literally doesn't know that feeling. And he thought that would be, that he'd be a great coach because, you know, he's totally fearless. He could just show. And he would get so frustrated with people that they were afraid. Larry Bird, one of the great basketball players of all time, not a great coach. Michael Jordan, terrible coach. Because they would just say, well, just do it. Not actually as helpful as it sounds. So if that's you, then yeah, it's kind of incumbent on you to find Because what I promise you, you know, is that feeling of struggle. Maybe in a completely different arena. What I promise you, you know, is that feeling of no matter what you do, it's not enough. Just maybe not around money. What I'm sure you know is that feeling of thinking something outside of you is going to take care of you. So you can coach from the universal without having to have gone through the specific. But you have to kind of almost be deliberate about it. Because if you just go, well, what's the big deal? You're not really the coach for them.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. It was very helpful.
Thank you, Dimitri. All right, gang. So we are going to be back. Is it next week? No, next week is...
No, because next week is the start of the next difficulty contestant. So we're back with business building on the 16th of March. So After we do...
I know I will see many of you, some of you over the Super Coaching Intensive Coaching Mastery next weekend, and the rest of you I will hopefully see the following week. Thank you very much, everybody.
All right, guys, I'll unmute you and I will see all of you very soon.
Thank you so much. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.